This is the Annie Fry Show.
This is what we've known since 2017 and what you and I have talked about, that white elitists that run the Democratic Party are far to the left of many black and Hispanic voters in the Democratic Party.
Well, welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. If you missed it, in the last hour, we had Will Scharf in studio. Great inside information from him on what it was like to be at Mar-a-Lago, of course, or not Mar-a-Lago, at the victory party in Palm Beach when Donald Trump officially won re-election last Tuesday night. It is so great that we had a conclusion to that race that night. I know we've said that before, but going back on it, start to finish, exhale, wonderful. We're still counting votes in California. We're still counting votes across the country. We don't know with 100% certainty what the final balance of power will be in the House of Representatives, but it is extremely, extremely likely that it'll be something crazy would have to happen for the Republicans not to have the majority there. Can everybody look at Florida and do what they do? Just do that. What Florida is doing, do that. But the introspection that some people on the left and the mainstream media have been doing since last week's election is interesting. And listening to Joe Scarborough there talking about the white elites in the Democratic Party, specifically the white women, they're not okay right now. They're not handling this well.
Yeah, this has been not just a story that we on conservative talk radio would talk about. This is something America is noticing, that the really far left progressives are losing their mind over this. I can't tell you how many people approach me this weekend, and first they're like, hey, how about this election? Have you seen about the women shaving their heads? Like it's really breaking through because it's so extreme, and it's tough to watch because you're like, you know, if you're anywhere middle to right, you're like, hey, this is either great or it didn't go the way I wanted, but you know, I guess we'll have to deal with it. But watching that faction of the party really act out, it is really, it's almost like performance art, and it's psychology on display all at the same time.
You were talking before the show, we have discussions professionally, what happens to our industry? What happens to our professional careers if Donald Trump wins, if Donald Trump loses? Like, what is the effect that might have on our future? You can't not think of that as somebody who makes their living talking about this stuff every day. But you were talking about the super left, I guess, mostly cable news.
Yeah, it's MSNBC and CNN specifically. They had a great night on election night, although everybody had a great night on election night.
But MSNBC was bragging about beating CNN.
Yeah, because they usually don't. And so, but since then, you know, as of Wednesday, basically, and on, MSNBC and CNN have absolutely tanked. I'm looking at a story from Outkick right here. It's saying exactly that, published yesterday, saying MSNBC and CNN have just gone down the tubes. CNN recorded just 419,000 people watched for the entire day on Thursday. I mean, you're talking about us beating them at that point. Like, it's incredible how low that is. And we're a just St. Louis station. Of course, you can listen outside, but I mean, it's amazing. So you really don't know what the bottom is here. I'm seeing reports now that CNN's starting to talk about cutting all kinds of staff.
Yeah.
So that's what happens when you are part of the ecosystem. That's the echo chamber thing. When your echo chamber fails you, they don't prepare you properly for an outcome like this, you're despondent. You don't know what to do, and you go away.
We know this because we live this in 2020. When people, when you lose something like this, especially in the way it was in 2020 for us specifically, because our team lost and it was very contentious, stressful. When that happens, a lot of you are like, I can't listen to this every day. If you were to lose a championship, if your kid loses the championship high school game, or if they lose the whatever, you wouldn't want to like tune in and remind yourself every day about the fact that you lost. You're going to try to find something and move in the direction of new focus, try to find a bright spot somewhere else, And if Donald Trump lost this past election, there are a lot of you who wouldn't be able to tune us in every day because you just don't want to think about it. It's too painful. We would have done our best to get you through it, but you kind of expect that drop off to happen. Hopefully you are all here. And I mean, if you're listening, you're here. Hi. But hopefully you find this as a place to go to hear the next bit of news. I mean, that's the thing. When Donald Trump lost and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris won, every day there was new information about what the other side was getting to do. And it was painful to hear that. We didn't have a choice to come into work. We had to come here and do our jobs. I do look at some of these meltdowns that are happening that you visualize. You get to see. Hopefully you're not seeing it in your real life. I pray to God that you're not seeing this with people you know personally. But I really want to emphasize the importance of, you know, letting people, essentially, this seems like a dramatic word, but I felt like this. You kind of are in a state of mourning when in 2020, having just been there, there is a sadness that you can't get past because you can't change anything that you know to be true. And that sadness, that disappointment, is palpable. Like, you feel it. You have to remind yourself to think of something else. There are very normal, rational people who are feeling that right now. And they are people who you love. There are people who likely love you that feel that way. And you kind of have to remind yourself to let those people have that moment. In 6 months from now, I believe that the world will be a significantly better place because Donald Trump will have been inaugurated. He will be, I don't know when the first 100 days would be over, but it's about 3 months in, January, February, March, April. At the end of April, you'll be able to see a lot of the immediate effect of what Donald Trump's presidency is doing for Americans. And I think that there are a lot of people who are very sad right now, probably to an extent, a little frightened. I know that feeling. You all know that feeling. Feeling that way is not irrational. Having a meltdown and then videoing yourself doing that and then publishing it for the world to see, for me, goes into irrational. I don't understand that at all. I can't think of a time in my life where I was ever significantly, truly sad, scared, disappointed, where I thought I needed that to be seen by everybody. Maybe that was my message. Like, listen, this is not good. This is not okay. Sharing that. But the meltdown moment, I don't understand that.
Well, it's strange in this election too, because you're watching, maybe not to the extent of shave your head and scream at the camera, but you're watching the Democrat media ecosystem kind of have this moment where they can't figure out, because every narrative they've tried to create and everything they could pull out of the walls, they threw. And it didn't work. And there's nothing left. They don't know what else to throw. And they're realizing everything we tried failed. And every talking point we possibly could have after the election isn't going to work, because every minority group and really every demographic group moved toward Trump.
What do you think, Brad, as somebody, I mean, you are a pastor, and so there's more, I mean, you can take this wherever you want to, it's not so much the God thing of it, but the psychology behind the fear that has been planted in a lot of these people. They've been misled dramatically.
Yes, absolutely.
So if you're afraid of something, not to diminish it too much, but we were all really scared of COVID.
Mm-hmm. At the very beginning?
Were we more afraid than we needed to be? It's debatable. But when you're made to be very frightened by something because you've been given wrong information, deliberately misinformed, you can't blame the person who's been misinformed for having a natural emotional reaction to said thing.
Yeah, I was actually reading a psychologist that was talking about, you know, like this behavior of shaving your head and stuff like that. And they said that's not all that uncommon for women whenever they are in a time of serious distress. That's one of the things that they do, is they will cut their hair shorter. They will do all this stuff. It's some sort of natural reaction to some sort of trauma, which tells me that whenever I'm watching these people do this on stream and live and shooting videos, that it's real, a real emotion that they're feeling. It's real fear. They're really scared. And so whenever you talk about that, one of the things that I think, man, I'll call it brainwashing. I feel like there has been a concerted effort to back people into a corner with so much fear. I mean, you can go from the Project 2025 lines where they're talking about all the different things that just weren't in there. I mean, they mix a little bit of truth in with the lies around that project, and they would throw that out there and be like, oh yeah, they're wanting to do X, Y, and Z to you in the Project 2025. And just think about how often you heard people say the same line. Donald Trump's Project 2025. You heard it over and over and over again. Or the Donald Trump is literally a Nazi. Donald Trump is Hitler. Your freedoms are at risk. You will have less rights if he's elected. And it was just a constant drumbeat. And it's the, is it Star Trek with the four stars or the blue lights or whatever? Where they had the captain in there and they just beat him to death with those are blue lights, those are blue lights, those are blue lights. And there were like four red lights or whatever.
I don't remember this.
Until he finally gives into it. It's a brainwashing technique. And that's what they've done to a large chunk of the population. They've manipulated their emotions. They beat them over the head with false or misinformation until they believe the untruths about Donald Trump that are basically untrue, and you will see that it'll be untrue. And my advice to you is if you are scared right now, if you're worried about this, write down your top five or six things that you are most afraid of. This is what I'm afraid Donald Trump is going to do. And then after that first 100 days, mark off any on the list that haven't happened yet.
I really do think, though, that we have, I mean, I'm putting this responsibility on myself and on our show, and you know, I assume that you guys are probably of a like mind. But I want to encourage you as a listener to the show to challenge yourself to not be who they think you are. There is a depiction of who Donald Trump is. You could say Hitler. Mm. Not good. There's no context in which we're like, oh, I'll take that as a compliment. No, never. He's not. He's not going to be that way. And when these people are confronted with what Brad's saying, like, what are you afraid of? Be specific about the things that you're afraid of. When those things don't happen, don't be the reason why they can apply what they thought about Donald Trump to something more tangible to their life. Well, oh, but Ryan was an a-hole about it. You know, like Annie, she couldn't stop rubbing it in or whatever. Like that we don't get it. We disagree. Like, the truth of the matter is this all comes down to we only disagree on policy. Other than policy positions that we have, we are living the same lives. We are buying the same groceries. We are filling our cars with the same gas. We are sending our kids in large part to the same schools in the same healthcare system. What is good for one of us is likely good for the majority of us. And to acknowledge those people who don't benefit from a system that is set up right now, we can see that other people are advocating for not the majority, maybe the minority, maybe the super minority. But Joe Scarborough, in that clip we started the segment with here, where he talks about how white elitists in the Democratic Party are far to the left of black and Hispanic voters, they've been cosplaying this whole time. These white elitist liberals, gosh, if you haven't seen Am I Racist, it is worth at least 1 month of subscription to the Daily Wire to watch Am I Racist, because it is a masterclass in showing how these white liberals, specifically women, put on this entire cosplay of the inferiority of people who are not white. How, because they are lesser than, it is the white person's responsibility to elevate them. There is an assumption that these white elitist liberals are making about people who aren't white, that their entire mantra is to say, we have to use the greatness of our white privilege to elevate these people who are incapable of doing it themselves. You have to be racist to begin with to have that mentality in your head. It is a racist mentality to think that way, to look at somebody whose skin is not white and know that they have a subpar life experience. You've never talked to them. You know nothing about them. You see their skin color and you know that their life is lived in an inferior way because their skin is a different color. You are seeing their skin color and you are making brash, broad judgments of those individuals because of their skin color. That is racism. And blacks and Hispanics, Joe Scarborough's even calling it out, are like, that's really not for me. All these blacks and Hispanics, if you foster the mentality of these white elitist liberals, all these blacks and Hispanics have to sit idly by until their white people come to save them. Which, ironically, is what those white elitists are trying to pin on the Republican Party. That is a belief system that liberals have been spoon-fed, ironically, by the likes of MSNBC and Morning Joe and all of these crap shows that are on these cable networks. They've been spoon-fed to believe this drivel for so long. They are not going to just go, yeah, maybe Trump's not so bad. They're going to have to come out of that. Some of them never will. But if you have been following the Trump arc from 2016 to 2020 to 2024, a lot of them will. Don't be the reason why they can't get past the final stage. Don't be the person who has always been willing to put the Trump sign in their yard or, oh my gosh, wear the red hat. Don't be the person in their life who they've identified as the Trump person who is the final level, the boss at the end of the game. Don't be the final boss that they can't defeat in their TDS to realize this guy was not as bad as I thought he was.
This is a time, hopefully, for reflection for everybody. Not just politically, though. I mean, the Joe Scarborough thing, if there are people who are avowed leftists having that moment, great. I'm really glad to hear that. But we all went through this in 2020. It was kind of in slow motion because it was such a weird election that you went through it in stages where you're like, what is happening? This kind of like grief process. Oh, no, what could happen to the nation? Where if you're on the left, you're having that all at once right now. So we get it, though. But there's a moment right now that personally, I went through this. I think you guys are saying that you went through the same thing in 2020 where you had to all of a sudden remind yourself what's important. And it's bigger than politics. Kind of look inward and go,
like a very active practice.
Where am I putting my hope? Where am I putting my faith? And I obviously, if you don't have that thing, I'm saying, yeah, explore that. Find that. Because if it's just politics, and I know a lot of people, and on both sides of the aisle, who just put their faith in these politics because it's very, very big. It's very powerful. It impacts your life in big ways. I understand it. But then when you lose, you got to do that reflection. And this is that time.
Well, I think to sum it up, I'll just put Chris's comment up here. I know Annie doesn't have her own opinion. This is just her husband's forced thoughts. And that is where we will take a break. I got to go I got to go see what Jared wants me to cover the next segment. He didn't tell me ahead of time, the nerve. Go vote on the Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll. Do you trust Trump's judgment on his cabinet picks? Yes or no? Leave us a comment in the YouTube live chat. And a reminder to stream us on the Odyssey app, AUDACY, wherever you go. Crystal clear connection across the globe to 97.1 FM Talk and The Annie Fry Show. Our podcasts are there. They're also available at anniefryshow.com/podcast. If you're not really a podcast person, there's a player there. You can just click and play. Let's take a quick break and find out what Jared wants to talk about next. We'll be right back.
I love you, Red Solo Cup.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
I lift you up. Proceed to party.
Follow. This is The Annie Fry Show. Follow Annie on Instagram at The Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to The Annie Fry Show. Jared wants us to talk about Winnie.
The poo?
Yeah, only when she's using her pine tray. We talked a little bit about this maybe Friday, I think it was. But the Fry family is adopting a puppy, and we are very excited about it. It's a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, and we've got the puppy cam up on the YouTube live right now.
Oh, yeah.
You have there, to. You still have to do the show, bud.
I know, but...
Keep elbowing
those
Ryan.
Those are really nice little puppies looking
right
there.
They're so cute. This is the worst like mom thing I've done in a long time. I put the calendar on the calendar. I put the date we were going to pick Winnie up. And so we have a countdown for it. So every day it's like 12 days till Winnie. I put it on the week before accidentally. So
oh, no.
I had to tell the kids, oh, you thought it was 12 days. It's actually 19.
Womp.
I was in the doghouse, so to speak, for that one.
Yeah, I like the pun.
But we are looking forward to bringing her home. And if you want to see her, she's sleeping soundly with her litter mates. On a live stream. They live stream the puppies. It's the best thing ever.
It's just a live stream of a crate full of puppies.
Yes.
All sleeping.
It's great fodder for our home to put that on. Like when things need to get done, you can put it up. And you would think that that would allow you to like kind of work around the television instead of sitting down and watching it. But we always inevitably are all sitting in the family just watching these puppies sleep.
Is it going to be more entertaining to watch all the puppies sleep on the camera or to have one of the puppies?
I don't know. Like if I'm just going to get to know the next litters that they have and just to continue to watch them. But Winnie, we're going to attempt, it's the intention to raise Winnie as a therapy dog. Jared is a teacher. We're hoping that we can potentially use it in his education with some of the different things that he does at school. So that's the hope. That's the plan. And Winnie was going to be my therapy dog if we lost the election. And now I'm just excited to have her not have to be like sad.
Well, yeah, now you can get a hunting dog.
This is a victory dog.
Don't tell that to Jared. That's what he wanted us to speak about now, isn't it? He talked to you.
I got a text.
Do you feel the lift? Do you feel physically different at all post-election than you did beforehand?
I mean, a little bit of a... like I said last week, it's really the same thing. Oh, this is real. Because I really expected Trump to win this election. The only thing that I couldn't factor in was, are there going to be 3 a.m. pipe bursts and stuff? I just didn't know about that. But, you know, I've been watching a lot of data, and I just had a sense that Trump was going to prevail here. So the fact that he did isn't really that surprising. And the difference is, in 2016... I didn't expect him to win, and then he did. Mm-hmm. And you go, whoa, this is weird.
Yeah.
In 2020, I expected him to win, and he didn't. And then it was like, whoa, this is weird. So this year has been strange in that same level of shock isn't there. But it is real now.
What do you think so far? YouTube poll for today is, do you trust Trump's judgment on his cabinet picks? Brad, you've seen him rolling in. Mm-hmm. Huckabee getting the UN, or not the UN ambassadorship, the Israel ambassadorship during the show today. Will Scharf talked a little bit about that in the 1 o'clock hour when he was on with us. Do you have unfettered trust in Donald Trump? Like, if he picks it, he must see something right about it. How do you feel about it so far?
So far, I like what he's doing. I mean, I haven't seen any names on there, but like, ooh, I wouldn't pick that person. I mean, I'm not one of those, like, Marco Rubio is a neocon kind of people. I think Marco Rubio is a solid conservative, and he would be a great addition. He seems to be the one that the people have the most angst about. Kristi Noem makes me go, okay. What are you doing there? But for the most part, yeah, it's all positive. I mean, on the poll, I voted yes. So, I mean, there are names that could pop out that I would be like, no, let's not do that. And then I would lose trust. But right now, I like it.
Ryan?
You know, what's strange is that I feel less confident when it's a name I know, because I know more about them and I've had a feeling this way or that about somebody. When it's somebody I don't know, I feel like, oh, I'll just trust you because, yeah, I don't know that guy.
This guy seems good.
Or that girl, yeah. And so it's a weird bag. I do trust him. I think he has learned a valuable lesson from his first administration on how important these picks are. And so you got to sort of give the guy some leeway. But it's not that he's above scrutiny. I think we can scrutinize these picks if we want to, but I still do trust them at this point.
Is it a total pipe dream to want to see Ron DeSantis as the Attorney General?
I think it is a pipe dream right now. I could see Ron DeSantis having a role in this administration at some point, though.
I feel like Florida has so many people who could handle Like, he's termed out. A lot of people are talking about, you know, well, we were talking about this at the beginning of the show. If the Republicans end up with it is probably going to be about a 3-seat majority in the House. They've already picked 2 Republicans out of the House to serve in the administration. That results in a special election. Special elections in this instance are very scary. If both of those so far went to Democrats, Republicans have a 1-seat majority, which means if one person is sick or whatever, then all of a sudden, yikes.
Or dies, or
yes,
then
which
you have
happened.
An election. So,
but when I look at Florida and their ability to handle the situation, I feel like they're the one place that I trust to not screw it up. When it comes to the Senate seat that would be vacated by Marco Rubio, I would love to see Ron DeSantis in the Senate, but I just feel like almost that it's like hard to be like, oh, the Senate isn't good enough for him. The Senate would be wonderful, but I would rather see him in a more influential position. I like Ron DeSantis. I like Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio and Ron DeSantis are my B1 and C1 picks for president for the next go around when we have this opportunity, if it's not J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance is a current senator from Ohio. He's obviously going to become the vice president, which means his Senate seat's going to be vacated. So there's an Ohio seat that's open. A lot of people are saying Vivek Ramaswamy is a really good choice for that. I think that Vivek would be wonderful in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I think about Ron DeSantis in the Senate, I think, gosh, I don't know if that's the best usage of his skills. Vivek Ramaswamy in the Senate, I feel like, is the best usage for his skills.
Yeah, absolutely. But give that guy a platform and let him go. And not, he wouldn't be every day either. He wouldn't be Corinne Jean-Pierre up there doing press secretary. People have talked about that too. He would be a valuable voice in the Republican Senate. Crazier things have happened. I would be surprised still to see him get that seat in Ohio. But, you know, if he lives there and he's among the conversation.
Why would you be surprised by it?
I just...
Who do you think from Ohio is...
I don't know. Like, whenever those kind of names come up and they're like, oh, that'd be a Republican dream team. I just sort of curtail my expectations because that's usually not the way it ends up going. But I could see it.
I was going to say, when you think about it, Mike DeWine is a Republican. I mean, he's a little squishy, but he's a Republican. Why wouldn't he put the Republican dream team in the Ohio Senate?
Because I just don't trust Republican states. Like the good old
you trust
boy.
The federal government?
Yeah, very much, much
me,
more now.
Let me ask you a question. If it were Vivek.
It's growing on me.
If Vivek was in Rubio's seat and Rubio got promoted or in Florida as a resident, would you trust Florida's Republican statehood to put Vivek in?
Yeah, possibly. I just don't trust the good old boy club.
So it's just
of state governments.
It's just DeWine that's got you going.
Well,
I don't know
really,
if he's going to do that.
A lot of them. I mean, they have these people that they've been friends with for a long time, and now I got this opportunity. You know, you can see that. I will say one other thing about the fact that they keep talking about, and Rubio is kind of the catalyst for this conversation. The media is still saying, and I don't think they're even trying to, you know, there's so many times we talk about stuff the media is saying, and they're clearly spinning. There's a word they keep using to talk about his picks that I don't even know if they're trying to use it. They keep talking about, well, he's a Trump loyalist. And you're like, who picks disloyal people to be a part of their cabinet?
I just don't really... I don't feel like I need to explain myself too much because I have 15 hours a week of explaining myself. So when I say this and you clip it out and it can be used against me, I'm sensitive to that thought. But your brand can't be only that you are ultra MAGA all the time. Like, that can't be the whole substance of the reason why anybody knows you. And there are some people who are like that. I feel like Carrie Lake is like that. That she hitched her wagon to the MAGA brand and thought she'd sail the MAGA ship right into the governorship and then the Senate. And I just thought to myself, like, that's not enough. I need more from you than that. And it proved to not be enough. I was reading a story about the Nevada-Arizona split ticket.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty wild.
There's
a third state. Where is the third state? It's not Pennsylvania.
It's probably Wisconsin or Michigan where
maybe
they're having
Wisconsin.
People splitting. Yeah.
But the people, like the amount of people who voted for Trump and didn't vote for Carrie Lake or Sam Brown. I just... It, there has to be substance behind it. I think Vivek has great substance behind it. He, there's parts of Vivek that kind of make me go, oh my gosh. But when I when you watch him in town halls and people approach him who don't agree with him or who are ready to go to the mat with him, he listens to them. And most of the time by the end, they don't necessarily leave with agreement, but they do leave with a grown mutual respect for one another. I want that.
Lake is good at that too, and that's part of the MAGA thing, that people want somebody who's willing to fight and win against the media, against the stupid narratives that are out there. And I think that's what Lake has ridden to primary nominations that hasn't gotten her over the hump, whereas somebody like Ramaswamy actually has a little more substance. He's willing to fight like that, but he's got more substance to what he's saying.
I was driving in today, and I don't know why the thought occurred to me, but running for president, the way Vivek Ramaswamy ran for president, now looking at where we are right now, flawless.
Yeah, right.
I don't think Vivek ever... Nah, he probably did. Did he ever actually think he was going to become the president of the United States? Like, I you're shaking your head. Like, no, obviously not.
Of course not.
But when you're running, there's got to be moments where you're like, what if I was the president of the United States? I'm closer than most people.
Say it loud enough. When I'm president.
Yes. But his whole candidacy, like one of the first things he did to truly make a name for himself is to say, if I become president, I'm pardoning Donald Trump. Will everybody else in this race do the same? That was like that was genius. One of the things that he did to make a dramatic name for himself from the get-go. And it stuck. And he was Donald Trump on the debate stage.
Mm-hmm.
He was Trump's advocate, like the ambassador to the debate.
Ambassador for the Don.
Yes. Really, really smart. Really, really smart.
And Doug Burgum, too. I mean, that guy ran a flawless campaign. He
Except for when he hurt and broke his leg right before the debate.
That does hurt you. But Chris Christie's another one that's like Kerry Lake. Republicans like that guy because he just fought the media. He wasn't that conservative. He did win a couple elections, but they've kind of went away from him. Kerry Lake's the same way. She never won an election, though.
Chris Christie, I mean, I'll say this till I'm blue in the face. I would take Chris Christie as the governor of the state of Illinois in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
I'd campaign for him. The state of Republican politics in Illinois is such a dumpster fire. You're like anything else. But on a national stage, no, that ain't it. Let's take a quick break. We'll get the results of the poll today. Do you trust Trump's judgment on his cabinet picks? They're coming in fast. Officer Gary says, yes, I trust Trump to choose his cabinet, especially this time around. And Kate says, yes, also bonus for spelling judgment correctly. That's the little things. Let's take a quick break. We'll get the results when we come back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. YouTube live chat poll. Do you trust Trump's judgment on his cabinet picks? Yes or no? It just seems kind of weird to me that you would be at this point like cheering on the results of the election and be like, I don't trust him at all. Like at this point, has this man not earned the right to determine whether someone is? I think that the measuring stick that a lot of people are using is, are they MAGA enough?
Well, you're right. He has earned your trust at this point. And he did not go into 2016 with as much knowledge as he's coming into 2024. He was trusting that a lot of people would give him good advice and give him good advice on who to give him advice. And it just didn't go well. I'm really looking forward to a second try at Rex Tillerson. That is a joke.
Shut up.
Figured I'd sneak that in right at the end of the show. But
everyone's
there was
like,
a lot of,
I remember that name.
There's a lot of picks like that you're just like, man, that stuff, I don't see it happening. It won't be perfect. There will be people that make decisions that you're like, that's not exactly what I would hope for. But at this point in the game, you got to trust the guy and let him fill out the cabinet.
Do you feel like you trust in him?
Yeah, I do. I think that he's going to make better decisions than he did the first time around. The first time around, those decisions were made because he was kind of fresh and kind of new. So I think that looking at Tom Homan as borders are really gives me comfort because, you know, that's one of the promises that he was making.
It's not even like, that's just a manifested title, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a...
It's not like the borders are... I hate the word czar. It's way too Russian.
Yeah, it's Russian.
But he's supposed to work hand-in-hand with, what is it, the Secretary of our Department of Homeland Security, that whatever Mayorkas is, he's supposed to work hand-in-hand with that person to get stuff done. And if his whole goal there is to secure the border and deport illegal aliens, I think that he is right on the right path. So I look at this, and I don't see any, like, Reince Priebuses or anything like that going in there. So, yeah, I trust him.
Apparently, Joe Biden was asked in a press conference today. He had... was it the Israeli ambassador that was in there talking with him, gave him a gift and thanked him for his commitment to Israel, supporting Israel in his tenure or whatever. But Israeli Channel 13 reporter Neria Kraus asked Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, if he thinks that he can get a hostage deal done by the end of his term. Joe Biden answered, "Do you think you can get hit in the head by that camera behind you?"
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even know what that means.
What's the implication? Is that a yes or a no?
Joe Biden's still doing Joe Biden things.
Yeah, okay. He's still the president of the United States, apparently.
When we broke last Friday at the end of the show, there was mounting pressure for Sotomayor to step down. Because apparently being 70 and diabetic is now like, ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Where have you been? What have you been doing this whole time? If now all of a sudden you're like really worried about this state of mental health and abilities... she has since then said, no, I'm not stepping down. Will that change? I don't know. But do you think there's any possibility that Kamala Harris, I've said this for a long time, that President Biden would step down and Kamala Harris would get to be the president? I think that Joe and Jill will do everything in their power to make sure that doesn't happen. But
I think there's as much chance of that as a camera hitting you in the back of the head right now.
Okay. No. Look over my shoulder. The YouTube live chat poll for today. Do you trust Trump's judgment on his cabinet picks? 374 votes today. 89% of you said yes. So we will continue to watch. The news keeps rolling in on these important picks, establishing exactly how this administration will govern in January when Donald Trump is re-inaugurated into the office of the presidency. Thank you for being with us. AnnieFryShow.com/podcast to listen to our podcasts. You can stream us on the Odyssey app. Keep it right here on 97.1 FM Talk.